I guess the words of that hymn could almost have been written by Joseph, couldn't they? The perceptive ones amongst you will have noticed that we've missed out chapter 38 in the book of Genesis. Well, there's a reason for that. It's not because I don't think chapter 38 has nothing profitable to teach us. I hope you know me a bit better than that by now. But at the end of chapter 37, as we leave Joseph in Egypt, it finishes there, doesn't it, that he's been sold in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard. It's as if Moses, who of course is the author of this opening book of the Bible, just pans the camera back to Jacob's family. And he just records a particular incident which focuses not upon Joseph, but upon one of the other brothers, Judah. And it's a passage which certainly is important within the history of Jacob's family, but it isn't directly associated with the story of Joseph. And given that the story of Joseph is the title of our series, we'll carry on uninterrupted with the story of Joseph by skipping over that particular chapter and going to chapter 39, so that our consideration of the life of Joseph is uninterrupted. But it is interesting to note that in chapter 38, if you care to perhaps read it, you might want to go home and read it this evening or sometime during the week, you'll see there that Judah, of his own volition, of his own choice, of his own free will, he leaves the family home and he makes some dreadful decisions. In contrast to Joseph, who is forcibly removed from the family home, yet he is able to do what is right. And so the chapter 38 actually draws that stark contrast between Judah and his brother Joseph, one who of his own free will makes some dreadful decisions, and yet Joseph, who's having all of these situations forced upon him, yet he is able to live a godly and righteous life. So it actually gives us that interesting contrast between Judah and Joseph. But we'll pick up the story of Joseph in chapter 39, the one that Chris read for us earlier. Now, I want you to note something right at the beginning. This chapter records events that take place in two particular locations. The first is the house of Potiphar, and the second is the prison into which Joseph is put towards the end of the chapter. So it takes place in two particular locations. And at the very start of each of those accounts, the account concerning Joseph's life in Potiphar's house, and then the account of his existence in the prison, both of those accounts begin with these words, "The Lord was with Joseph." Look at chapter 39. Joseph has been taken down, verse 1, to Egypt. Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, brought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph. He's been forcibly removed. He's been put in a position that he had no choice about. He wouldn't have chosen it for himself, that's certain. Has the Lord abandoned him? No. He's been taken to a foreign country. Is there a place on the face of this earth where the Lord is not present? No. Has the Lord abandoned him because he's no longer with his own people? No. The Lord is with him. Verse 20, his master takes him, puts him into prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the prison. He's in a place of shame. He's in a place of condemnation. Has the Lord abandoned him? No. Verse 21, the Lord was with Joseph. All of these things happening to this young man, all out of his own control, all of these different circumstances that he would not have chosen for himself happening to him. And all along the way, we have this reminder, the Lord is with him. The Lord is with him. Terrible things sometimes happen to the Lord's people. Has he abandoned them? The Lord is with him. It's great encouragement, isn't it? The Lord's with him. There's no circumstance where the Lord's people are outside of the presence of the Lord if we will walk in his ways faithfully with him, as Joseph is doing. What is one of the open secrets about the life of this young man as we really start to get into the story of what happens in Egypt? Well, it's this, isn't it? The Lord is with him. Good and bad, the Lord is with him. Well, this evening, I've made myself a slave to alliteration. We're going to go through this passage and we'll walk our way through it. And I want to point out 10 things about this young man and the things that happened to him. First of all, verse 1. Number 1, an unknown future. Now, Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. What a journey that was. It's just a couple of words on the page. Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, but he's been taken as a slave. He's walking behind these traders who are almost certainly all on camels. You'll have seen the films with the slave bound in some way, being dragged across the hot desert sand. Well, that was very similar to the kind of situation that Joseph was in. What a long journey, day after day, trudging through the hot sun, shackled and tied up and bound. And he's been taken down through an area of Egypt where he almost certainly would have seen some of the grand sights of Egypt that in his day were very new. Some of the pyramids in all their splendor. We think the pyramids look pretty good today. But as originally built, they were finished off with smooth stone, the vast majority of which is gone now off the pyramids. And they would be smooth surfaces gleaming in the sunshine. The Sphinx in pristine condition compared to the way it looks today. And all these other things, this strange culture, foreign language. He's only a young boy, really. What on earth am I being taken to? What on earth does the future hold for me? How am I going to survive? What's going to happen to me? There's so much tied up in those simple words. Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. He's got an unknown future. He hasn't got a clue what's going to happen to him next. How long is he going to survive? He's no idea. How is he going to be treated? He's not a clue. What's going to happen to me? Completely unknown. But the Lord is with him. And then we see that Potiphar, this officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, an important man. And Joseph immediately is put into contact with someone who is going to be in a position to lead Joseph into the presence of Pharaoh. Now it's remarkable, isn't it? We know, if you know the story, we know how the story is going to proceed. We know the position that Joseph's going to be put into. But here he is, being taken into Egypt as a slave. And yet he's had that dream that all of his brothers will bow down to him. And we know a few chapters further on, Joseph is going to go from the position of slave to the second most powerful man in the land after Pharaoh. Now, how on earth is that going to be? How on earth can that happen? All the way through this young man's life, everything is happening as God would have it happen. Everything is fulfilling the Lord's purposes. And he arrives in Egypt a slave, and who would buy him but someone from within the confines of those who have access to Pharaoh. And it's through Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, he'd end up in the prison. And Pharaoh would come to hear about this young man. All in the Lord's plan. Why is that? It's because the Lord's with Joseph. So he has an unknown future. But then look at verse 2. Unexpected success. The Lord is with Joseph and he was a successful man. There's a clear link, isn't there, between those two phrases. The Lord was with Joseph and he was a successful man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now, you know, most slaves in Egypt wouldn't have expected to be called successful men. Most of them would have expected to live a life of drudgery and servitude. To have had their lives described as a success? A slave? Successful? Hardly the kind of description you would expect of such a one. But here he is, a successful man. Why? Because the Lord is with him. Verse 3. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. Well, how can it possibly be that Potiphar can come to the conclusion that the Lord is behind this man? Why does he not just think, well, I've struck lucky here. There was this young lad in the slave market, looking frightened out of his wits. And I thought there looked like there was something about him, and I've just struck it lucky. He just has turned out to be a good one. Was Joseph happy that Potiphar should only draw that conclusion about him? Not at all. Well, how does Potiphar know anything about the Lord who is behind this young man? We can only come to one conclusion, can't we? It's that Joseph has been an unashamed witness. He has been an unashamed witness. Potiphar saw that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. How about you and I? Now, as Christians, on the one hand, we shouldn't be too concerned about making a name for ourselves. But at the same time, we ought to have a good name in order that we don't bring dishonour upon the Lord. Isn't that right? Do we, if we are able to have a good name, do we bother to stop and make it clear to people, well, actually, it's all the Lord's doing. You've seen something in me? It's the Lord. You recognize my loyalty, my hard work, the fact that I'm conscientious? Well, let me tell you, I can't do all of those things in my own strength. That's the Lord's doing. Let me tell you about the Lord. Is there any of that in us? That people come to recognize themselves? Wow. That's God at work. He's an unashamed witness. How about us? In verses 4 to 6, we see unbelievable responsibility. He's a slave. Joseph found favor in the sight of Potiphar, his master, and served him. He didn't find favor in the sight of Potiphar and milk it for all he was worth. He found favor in the sight of Potiphar and worked hard. He didn't find favor in the sight of Potiphar and use it to his own advantage. He found favor in the sight of Potiphar and worked harder. It's a good example for us. And he's given unbelievable responsibility. Potiphar made him overseer of his house. He made him the butler, if you like, of his household. And all that he had, he put under his authority. This young lad, Joseph, was given complete control of everything that Potiphar had. It says in verse 5, "So it was, from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Thus he left," that's Potiphar, "left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he didn't know what he had except for the bread that he ate." That is quite remarkable. Potiphar delegated everything to Joseph and trusted him so implicitly that he just let him get on with it all. He never questioned him. He never went back to check that this guy wasn't conning him and fiddling him and taking him for all that he had. He would wake up every morning and he'd just look around and see that he had food on his table and the household seemed to be running well. And he just accepted it at face value that everything was in order because Joseph was in control. That's a most amazing situation for Joseph to be in. What a testimony this young man has. What a life. What a witness. What integrity this man has. What honesty. What a conscientious worker. That Potiphar is happy just to leave it with him. Not a care in the world now, Potiphar. If anyone is, "Potiphar, how much money have you got in the bank?" "I haven't got a clue. Go and ask Joseph." "How much petty cash is there in your cash box?" "Haven't got a clue. Go and have a word with Joseph." Remarkable. Well, that's the integrity of a godly man. And he's given unbelievable responsibility. Now, within those verses that we read, have a look at verse 5. And this is point 5. Unimaginable blessing. "So it was, from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake." Now, let me ask you, those of you who are here this morning, do you recognize something? Were you listening? How many Christians does it take to make a Christian home? Is it possible for one Christian in a household to stand firm and have more influence in that household than all the other unbelievers in it put together? Wasn't that something that we looked at this morning from 1 Corinthians 7? And here's a perfect example of it in the Old Testament. Here is one man, and because this one man is faithful and righteous and just, the whole of Potiphar's household benefits and is blessed because of this one righteous man. And that should really encourage us again. In all of those circumstances where we find ourselves having to stand alone, in all of those circumstances where we find ourselves the only Christian, and you think to yourself, "I am simply going to be swamped by all the unrighteousness that is around me," the Word of God says, no. It need not be so. One righteous person can stand when the Lord is with them. One righteous person can make a difference. One righteous person can bring blessing upon their whole situation. What an encouragement, and what a comfort, and what a challenge. What a difference every believer in this room this evening can make as we all go our separate ways tomorrow morning. Maybe in your home, you're the only Christian. Maybe in your place of work, you're the only Christian. Maybe in your place of study, you're the only Christian. Can I really make a difference? My Bible tells me that when the Lord is with you, you can. Number 6, verse 7. And here comes Potiphar's wife. We don't know much about this woman, do we? But what we do know is enough to have some dislike for her. It came to pass after these things, so Joseph's now in this position, that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." It's amazing, isn't it, that she has witnessed all the blessing that this young man has brought into her home, all the benefits that she's receiving because of the work of this young man, and the only thing that she wants to do is defile him. Isn't that remarkable? It's just an amazing insight into the sinfulness of the human heart. It's the only thing that she can think of. And we see in this woman unreserved lust. And it's a reminder to us that as we go through our lives as Christian believers, even when the Lord is blessing, there will always be those things to challenge. There will always be those hurdles that come in the way. There will always be those challenges that catch us up. Joseph, I don't know, we don't know, do we, that whether there's been things quietly going on from this woman that has kind of given Joseph a hint that she's up to something, or whether it's come completely out of the blue and it's been totally unexpected. But even this righteous man who's achieved so much and done so much good finds himself being confronted with evil thought and with evil intent. And we all will, just like Joseph has. We'll all find we have exactly those same kinds of experiences. Even when things seem to be going really well, there will always be those things that come in and confront us and challenge us and test us, as Joseph is now being tested. So Joseph is suddenly confronted with this unreserved lust. And then in verse 7, we see his response to her approach. And we see in Joseph unwavering loyalty. Unwavering loyalty. Joseph refused and said to his master's wife, "Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house. Potiphar hasn't got a clue what I do all day. He never checks up on me. He leaves me. He gives me free rein to do anything I want in this house. I could do anything I like, and most of the time he would never know. He hasn't kept anything back from me, but you. You're the only thing in his whole household that hasn't been given to me. Why? Well, of course, you're his wife. You're not part of the household he can give me. That's who you are. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? There's no one greater in this house than I. But how can I do this thing?" And we see Joseph's unwavering loyalty. He has unwavering loyalty towards his master, Potiphar. And he remembers that as a believer, he must also have unwavering loyalty to his God. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Remember, that was the thing that David forgot. And when he came to his confession, he had to remind himself and confess before the Lord, "It's against you, and you only have I sinned." Well, Joseph actually remembered that in time. And he remembered that at the right place and at the right point. And he said, "No." And when he was confronted with this great temptation, he remembered whose he was. And there's a really big, simple lesson for us to learn. When we're confronted with temptation, remember whose you are. No. How can I sin against God? Unwavering loyalty. First to his master, his earthly master, and to his God. Point number 8. Verse 10, unrelenting pressure. Some of us know a thing or two about this, don't we? You know what it is to be an unrelenting pressure, some of you. So it was, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, she just would not stop. She just went on at him again and again and again. She just tried to wear him down. Unrelenting pressure. He did not heed her. He did not heed her. When it happened about this time, when Joseph went into the house to do his work, none of the men of the house was inside. She caught him by the garment, "Lie with me." What temptation. She's been on and on and on and on. And here he is. No one else in the house, just him and Potiphar's wife. How easy it would have been for Joseph to say, "Well, there's no one else around. No one will know. Just to get this woman off my back and give in." How easy that would have been for Joseph. How many men would have caved in that day? But Joseph didn't. But do you remember in 1 Corinthians 6 what Paul said to Corinthians when they were faced with sexual immorality? Flee. Run away. Don't stop to pray about it. Don't stop to talk about it. Don't stop to discuss it or debate it. Run. Maybe Paul had in mind Joseph when he wrote that. Because what did Joseph do? He just turned round and ran. And you can just imagine him. She's got hold of his cloak. He'd have been quite finely dressed, although a slave, chief of everything that Potiphar had. Potiphar wouldn't want him to give a bad impression to guests. He'd have been quite finely dressed. And she's got hold of his whatever his outer coat was. And you can just imagine him turning and just running. And she's just left holding his coat. He hasn't stopped to say a word. He just turns and runs. Christian believer, if you find yourself faced with that kind of pressure, that kind of temptation, there's your example. There is what to do. Just turn around and run. And just get away from it. That's what he does. Unbelievable temptation that Joseph endured. I suspect many of us will not actually endure that degree of temptation that Joseph went through. It's interesting, you know. Imagine during some war that two prisoners of war have been taken captive and they're taken to a place of interrogation. And they're taken into a room and there, as they look around, they can see all kinds of instruments of torture prepared. And they can see, just by looking, that all of these instruments of torture are kind of graded. So that the first one, well, that'll be fairly painful. But they can see that the longer they resist, that torture is just going to get more and more unbearable. And as they look to this end of the line of instruments, they can see some pretty horrific and barbaric things are waiting for them. And the first guy is taken in, and the first instrument of torture is applied to him, and he immediately caves in. "It's okay, I'll talk. What do you want to know?" The second man is taken in, and the first instrument of torture is applied, and the second, and the third, and the fourth, and the fifth. And eventually he's a crumpled heap of a man unconscious on the floor, and he's resisted every single one. He's never opened his mouth once. And then years later, these two men, having survived the war, are retelling their stories. And the first man, the one who caved in straight away, he's standing talking to people. And someone says to them, were you tortured? Torture, he says. I'll tell you about torture. No, says the second man. I'll tell you about torture. Some of us, when faced with temptation, if we cave in at the first, actually, we know almost nothing of temptation. Because as soon as we're confronted with it, we give into it. It's actually those who resist and resist and resist. They're the ones who know about temptation. And imagine the Lord Jesus, who we are told in the scriptures was tempted at every point as you are. At every point as you are, and yet without sin. He knew about temptation. Unrelenting pressure that Joseph endured. The ninth thing we see, verses 13 to 18, are unjust accusations. And we see there, I won't bother reading it right through again, but Potiphar's wife just pours out this series of lies about Joseph. Completely turns the story around, makes it out that it was all Joseph's doing. And this just man, this righteous man, this noble man, this godly man, is just the subject of all of these unjust accusations. And you know, that happens to God's people sometimes. Think about Christ. On the night that he was betrayed, and the night that he was taken prisoner, the night that he was led captive from court to court, all kinds of unjust accusations railed against him. All the way through the story of Joseph, we see these little glimpses of Christ, these shadows of that which Christ will endure. And here's Joseph, unjust accusations. And you know, we will sometimes find as Christians that people make unjust accusations against us. Sometimes you've come across Christians and the accusations made against them have made the headlines. They've been in the newspapers. They've been on the television news, some of them. Well, we need to remember that if we ever find ourselves in that situation, we're certainly not the first of God's people to be in that position. And the Lord himself has been there. Christ will never ask us to go where he hasn't already been. And let's remember too that he'll never ask us to go beyond that which we can endure by his grace. God's people sometimes are the focus of unjust accusations. And then finally, number 10, verses 19 to 20, we have undeserved treatment. Potiphar, naturally, is just bereft. He just cannot believe that this man Joseph could have done such a thing. Of course, Potiphar should have known better. He should have stopped and thought about it a bit. Maybe he didn't know his wife as well as he thought he did. And Joseph finds himself thrown into prison. A place where the king's prisoners were confined. Isn't that interesting? Joseph's life is all in God's hand. It's not just any old prison. It's the king's prison. How is God going to get Joseph from slave to second in command of the whole country? It's the king's prison. It's Pharaoh's prison that Joseph has landed in. The Lord is with him. And even in the face of undeserved treatment, the Lord is bringing about his purposes, and he's going to use this young man in a most remarkable way. And then we see, just finally, in verses 21 to 23, we see a most remarkable thing. We see everything that we've just seen unfolding in Potiphar's house all unfolding again in the prison. What was the first thing that we thought about this evening? An unknown future. Well, here he is now, and he's in prison. And he's in another unknown future. The second thing was unexpected success. The Lord, verse 21, gave him favour in the sight of the keeper of the prison. Unashamed witness. The Lord made it prosper. Unbelievable responsibility. The keeper of the prison didn't look into anything that was under Joseph's authority. Verse 22, the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Just imagine the prison inspector coming round one morning and going up to the chief warden in the prison and saying, how's everything going? Oh, it's going great. I'd just like to have a look round, if you don't mind. Yeah, sure, help yourself. Well, have you got the keys? No. Why, where are they? Well, actually, one of the prisoners looks after the keys. I beg your pardon? I'm sorry? One of the prisoners looks after the keys. It's almost ridiculous, isn't it? It's almost so ridiculous to be untrue. But that's what can happen when the Lord is with his people and when his people walk uprightly, righteous and godly before him. The title of this message was Living in God's Presence. That's Joseph. One final little bit of alliteration. Living in God's presence is unrivaled. There is nothing like it. There is nothing to beat it. There is nothing to better it. Will you, this week, live each day conscious, aware, determined that you are in the presence of the living God?